and a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget that you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by checking out the Nick Craig Show in your favorite podcast app. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. Our show this morning is brought to you in part by The Law Group. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com or give them a call 910-251-6088. That's 910-251-6088. More from them coming up a little bit later on in the program this morning. Well, we were going to, and we'll hopefully get to it tomorrow, some big discussions going on at the federal government as it relates to Chinese-held land here in the United States. A big announcement earlier this week from the Trump administration. However, that is on the back burner this morning after an interview yesterday, his first since announcing that he would not be seeking re-election here in North Carolina. U.S. Senator Tom Tillis sat down with Jake Tapper of CNN to discuss a plethora of issues from why he did not vote for the Big Beautiful Bill onto who he thinks going forward could potentially take that spot, some criticism of not the president himself, but the people around him, Secretary Hegseth, FEMA, a lot of other issues in a wide-ranging, about 30 or so minute interview that took place on CNN yesterday. And we'll take it right from the top with the senator describing his reluctance to vote for the Big Beautiful Bill. He was one of the two Senate holdouts, him and Rand Paul out of Kentucky being the only two U.S. senators to vote against the legislation in the Senate. It, of course, then would go on to the House, pass the House, and then the president signed it into law on Independence Day, July the 4th, on the holiday weekend. So we'll start it off. Here was how it all unfolded with Jake Tapper and Tom Tillis on CNN last night.
When you had your conversation with or conversations with President Trump on text and on the phone, you were telling him that you thought his advisors were not giving him the full truth about what the Senate bill would do.
Absolutely. I've told the president a number of times that I very seldom believe I've ever disagreed with him, but I have disagreed with bad advice that some of his advisors are giving him, whether it's on a nominee or whether it's on policy. I told the president that the House mark was great. The House mark dealt with work requirements, saved $800 billion. There's only a $200 billion delta between the Senate mark, which was largely requested by staff in the White House. It wasn't the brainchild of any one member that I can find here, but it does so much damage. It just wasn't thought through. And hopefully we can convince them that that we have to fix it. And that we can either fix it with a bipartisan bill coming up or the ACA extensions or some way we need to fix it. Otherwise, I told the president, I really do believe it could be his Obamacare.
Because
now I'm going to stop that there. We'll obviously go back to it. A pretty serious thing to levy and claim that this could be President Donald Trump's Obamacare. This all comes down to a poor decision from the federal government and poor decisions from state governments over the last couple of decades, or really over the last probably 15 years or so. You've had many states, North Carolina, one of the last holdouts against Medicaid expansion. And you might say, Nick, what's the issue with Medicaid expansion? Well, I mean, we can get into the issues of there not being work requirements where you've got able-bodied people in their 20s, 30s, and 40s who are not working, getting free government entitlement health care. That in itself is an issue. But the bigger overarching problem, and why at the time I was so pissed off, and I was on the radio here in Wilmington at the time, when Republicans move forward with Medicaid expansion, is exactly the situation that we're in right now. The whole thing with Medicaid expansion, more than 670,000 people have been added to the Medicaid rolls across the state of North Carolina under this expansion through the federal government. And the issue is just that. It requires the federal government to cover 90% of the costs. The state government provides 10%. That equals 100. That's how you fund the expansion for Medicaid. That is one of the main reasons why so many states, including North Carolina, moved forward with Medicaid expansion. But see, there's a big issue with that. You are reliant on the federal government, who is $36, $37 trillion in debt, to continue to supply you the 90% of the expansion costs. And there was no doubt in my mind when Republicans in the North Carolina General Assembly moved forward with this a couple of years ago that there was a risk that with a new administration, regardless of whether it was Donald Trump or not, but a Republican conservative administration in Washington, D.C., determining that that is not sustainable for the federal government, that that is not sustainable long term. So what has happened now? The federal government has woken up, has come to its senses and realized that it cannot afford this 90-10 split with all of these states for able-bodied 35-year-old men to sit on Medicaid. It's just not sustainable. So they've made these changes, and it is going to have a huge effect on Medicaid expansion in states like North Carolina. It was a crappy deal to start that was reliant on the federal government's 90% funding. The federal government is broke. The federal government is $36 trillion in debt. The idea that you would cozy up to them to fund the expansion, adding more than 750,000 people to Medicaid, is the stupidest thing that you can imagine. It would be like trying to borrow money from somebody who's declaring bankruptcy. You would never do it. You might do it. But there's a very strong possibility that the individual that you're borrowing money from, who just happens to be filing for bankruptcy and just happens to not have any money, can't hold up their end of the deal. And that's exactly what's happening in Washington, D.C.
Of the promise that he made that was not true, if you like your doctor, you can keep your doctor.
And now it's like, if you like Medicaid and you're eligible, you can keep it. That's fundamentally untrue, because the funding mechanisms are probably going to take people who are eligible for it off of it over time, or it's going to create an enormous unfunded mandate on the states in a time frame that they can't absorb. In North Carolina, the estimate is nearly $26 billion over 10 years. Now, people say, well, we've delayed it for a year. I said, the numbers are still the same. It's a 10-year hit. But and then pretending like it won't have political consequences.
Do you think the people in the
now, to the point of it having political consequences, that's exactly the problem. And this is exactly why I'm so adamantly against Republicans expanding Medicaid in North Carolina, because it's not their choice. Well, it was their choice to expand it, but it is not their choice if the federal government changes their match. And that's exactly what's going to happen. So you're going to look at a situation where the state of North Carolina, particularly Republicans in the North Carolina General Assembly, are going to have to come up with billions of extra dollars to fund Medicaid if they want to keep it, which they don't have the money to do so. So then it will be the Republicans who are responsible for kicking 670,000 people off of their expanded Medicaid coverage. The term political suicide could not be used any more accurately to describe this situation that's unfolding. And I don't have any sympathy for Republicans in the General Assembly. We've got a lot of great members of those here across southeastern North Carolina. I have absolutely no sympathy for them. They made a terrible deal a couple of years ago. They gave Roy Cooper a big political win, and now it's going to be the Republicans that are the bastards. It is going to be the Republicans that are the demons for rolling back Medicaid coverage on 670 plus thousand individuals, because they don't have between $30 and $40 billion over the next decade to continue to fund Medicaid. And that's exactly the issue that has unfolded. That is exactly the problem that we are seeing as a result of Medicaid expansion and being completely reliant on the federal government to fund this expanded program. It's not sustainable. It was never going to be sustainable, and it puts Republicans in a miserable place here in the state of North Carolina.
There's no question the Democrats are going to say that he broke his promise and that Medicaid recipients are going to be at risk. But he's got people that are giving him bad advice that are around him every day. And I continue to say, look, you got people here. I have a vested interest in making sure that President Trump's the most successful Republican president in the history of this country. I was a Republican long before President Trump was, and I'll be a Republican for the rest of my life. I built a majority in North Carolina. I want to see that that successful streak and all the benefits that have occurred in North Carolina occur and continue. And so you have to be able to tell truth to power. That's our job. And that's exactly what I attempted to do last week, and that's what I'll continue to do. And I'll continue to work with the president if he chooses to. I'm a transaction guy. Completely believe they missed the mark on this one. His advisors got it wrong. Off to the next transaction. Let's fix this or work on something else. There are plenty of things where we agree.
So that is at least good to hear. Now we'll see if that actually comes to fruition. He says, and I believe him when he says he's got a vested interest in the success of a Republican administration. I believe Tom Tillis when he says he wants to continue to have a relationship with President Donald Trump and continue to work on the litany of issues that are big problems in Washington, D.C. right now. Now, though, that Tillis announced that he is not running for re-election, he is not beholden to any donors, he doesn't have to worry about a primary election in March of next year, and he doesn't have to worry about getting elected in November. So what he does up in Washington, D.C. is solely his decision, and really there's zero consequences to what he does because his name's not going to be on a ballot. He will be in the United States Senate for the next year and a half, regardless of what he does or who he works with.
The Wall Street Journal reported that when he made his final pitch to you, you said, "I can't effing do that."
No, it sounds like me, but I don't remember the conversation at that level of granularity. But I made it very clear to the president and I have never had a pitched discussion. Every time, and I've probably done it more than many, every time I'm very frank with him, but he has never been untoward, never raised his voice.
He just goes on social media and does it.
Yeah, well, that's the first time he ever did. And so after he did that, I tell the president that he's clearly got the votes, that I will try and work to get something done in the House. He didn't need my vote, and that I would be respectful and quiet and try to do my work on the House side. And then I got that text that I texted him, or I saw the, I'd never read it, but I saw like the first sentence. I told the president in another text, I said, "Now it's time to start looking for my replacement because I don't deal with that kind of bullshit."
I don't deal with that kind of bullshit. That's the direct response there from Senator Tom Tillis when, of course, all of this blew up back 2 weeks ago with him speaking on the Senate floor against the legislation, speaking out against it, and being one of just two senators who did not and were not in favor of this legislation going forward. You know, and I do need to point this out beforehand. Jake Tapper and CNN, and I don't have the entire interview. I have the entire interview. I'm not playing the entire interview. But as you can imagine, this is typical. And I want to make sure you understand this because you're going to see a lot of praise laid upon Senator Tom Tillis by the political left over the next year and a half. You are going to see a lot of individuals who have been completely opposed to everything that Senator Tom Tillis has done in his 20 plus years in public service here in North Carolina, now up in Washington, D.C., the same individuals that despised him during that period of time, the same individuals that were constantly raking him over the coals and calling him right wing, a radical this, and of course, just using all of their typical attacks that they use against Republicans, now the tune will change and you will hear praise of Senator Tom Tillis from the political left. You will hear praise of the great things that Senator Tillis has done and his phenomenal track record. And I'm not saying that he doesn't have an incredible track record, because he does. Regardless of what North Carolinians think, he ushered in conservative majorities in the North Carolina legislature. Many folks have argued that he is one of the most impactful leaders in modern North Carolina history. After 100 plus years of Democrat control, it was Senator Tom Tillis and others in the North Carolina General Assembly that got our state back on track, that buried our state out of hundreds of millions of dollars worth of debt, that continued to that started the process of reducing the income tax, that started reducing the corporate income tax, that have made our state a bastion of freedom and sustainability long term. That I will not take away from Senator Tom Tillis. But I do want you to make sure that you are aware that many of the folks ideologically not aligned with Senator Tillis, who will now start praising him for what he has done. This is a typical tactic used by the left. You know, one of the more, I say recent, but one of the best examples of this is John McCain, right? When he was in the United States Senate, when he was running for president against Barack Obama, Democrats despised him. They hated him. And I use that word very intentionally. They hated him. They hated what he stood for. They hated his political ideology. They dragged him through the mud and made him into a fool. Then, of course, after Obama won, he then voted against removing and revoking the ACA, the Affordable Health Care Act, aka Obamacare. Then, of course, the left praised him. And, of course, after his passing, they made him out to be the greatest statesman that ever existed. This is how the left operates. When you are a Republican in power, regardless of whether you're in leadership or not, but when you're a Republican in power, the media despises you. The left despises you. But the second that you die, determine that you're not going to run for re-election or vote against the party in which you are associated with, that being the Republicans, the left will surround you and come to your support. They will praise you for all of the great work that you have done. These people have absolutely no shame whatsoever. These individuals are morally bankrupt, and you are going to see a lot of praise from those on the political left over the next year and a half on Senator Tom Tillis, the same guy that they have despised for 20 plus freaking years. Keep that in mind as you watch this story unfold, as you watch this coverage play out over the coming weeks, months, and about year and a half or so. Just watch how the media slowly begins to shift their tune away from Senator Tillis. And they'll start praising him and talking about how great of a public servant he has been. Meanwhile, in the past, they have done nothing but crucify him and say and just make up things about Senator Tillis. This is a typical tactic that the left plays with Republican politicians. Hopefully, Senator Tillis, and I believe that he knows this well enough and is not going to fall into this trap. So the question is, and continues to be, was this decision made before his decision not to vote on the one big beautiful bill, or is this something that happened last second? Senator Tillis answering that.
I started a process of what I described to many of my donors and supporters of confirmatory due diligence back in January and February when I said I've got to convince myself that this transaction of being involved in the most expensive race in U.S. history, again, that it's worth doing and that there is a path to winning. And I felt like I needed to determine whether or not I could raise the money that was necessary for my campaign. I needed to determine if we were going to have a going concern in terms of governing over a reasonable period of time so that I could then determine if the environment of the election, if those two things were in place, knowing that it was likely going to be a negative environment because of the historic trend of the party in power in the White House having headwinds, then I was going to make a decision probably more in the September timeframe.
So he was already feeling this out. There were rumors well before this public spat with Donald Trump over the big, beautiful bill that Senator Tillis may have not looked to run for re-election. I'd heard from some folks across the state, all off the record, of course, that they were determining whether he was he and his staff and campaign folk were determining whether he was going to run for re-election. And I think he makes a lot of very valid points. I mean, Tom Tillis has been in office for 20 years now. He's not a freshman to this game. And he describes a litany of issues that are real concerns. It is a midterm election. Historically, those are not good for Republicans. It is undoubtedly likely to be the most expensive Senate race in U.S. history once again. Now, Tillis can raise the money. There's no question or concern about that. He is one of the most prolific fundraisers in Washington, D.C. But all of those factors leading up, and, you know, the fact of the matter is he is in a tough situation in North Carolina with his voting base. And there's a question on this a little bit later, but Tillis is in a tough spot. The MAGA base has not been a fan of him, not only over the One Big Beautiful Bill, but potentially nuking the Hegseth nomination, the other votes and decisions he's had in the past. So the conservative base of the party is not in love with Tillis. Democrats, of course, have always hated him and will continue to do so, contrary to the rose-colored glasses that they're going to put on him over the next year and a half or so. So there's no votes there on the left. And that essentially just leaves you with more middle-of-the-road Republicans and maybe some right-leaning Democrats that have found themselves dissuaded with the Democrat Party. Right? There's a relatively small group of core supporters that Senator Tillis has left. I made this point earlier this week, and I'll make it once again. Regardless of whether you think Tom Tillis is a hardcore conservative or not, give me Tom Tillis every single day over Roy Cooper, Wiley Nickel, or Jeff Jackson. Ladies and gentlemen, I know that that is a hard pill to swallow. I know that that is not the easiest thing in the world to deal with. But I can promise you, without a shadow of a doubt, that Tom Tillis being in Washington, D.C., as one of the two Republican senators from the state of North Carolina, will be better than any Democrat that you can put in front of me. Does that mean that Tillis is perfect? Does that mean that Senator Tillis is always carrying the conservative football down the field? No. But more times than not, he is. And he's doing it 100% more than any Democrat ever will. And that is the problem that Tillis is facing here in North Carolina. Part of it is his own fault. He's completely MIA. He has not been to a state GOP convention in years. And he, of course, feels that the GOP is a group of individuals that don't like him. But he never shows up. He's in the state, but he's never publicly appearing in the state. He's never trying to convince voters that he's doing the right thing. He's just missing in action. And I think that's been a grave miscalculation from him and his team. You know, does the GOP and do many of the individuals that I would call actively involved in the GOP have issues with Tom Tillis? They absolutely do. You know how you deal with that? You show up. You show up at the yearly NCGOP convention and you speak to the people in the room and you're blunt and you're honest with them. You tell them that you understand that they have issues with you, that you understand that they don't love every single vote that you've ever made, that they don't love every single decision that you've ever had. But you convince them, you tell them that you are continuing to fight for your core principles, that you are continuing to support and push the Republican message. Instead, he's just missing, completely missing in action. And it's part of the reason why there's been so much animosity that has grown within conservative grassroots bases here in the state of North Carolina, because they've never seen him. They've never heard from him. He doesn't do a whole hell of a lot of interviews. Even Jake Tapper mentioned during his show, Tom Tillis doesn't do a whole lot of national interviews. He does some radio here and there. He does some slight interviews, but he's never talking to the voters. He's never talking to the base of people whose support that he needs. And I will forever believe, regardless of whether you like Tom Tillis or not, that was a grave miscalculation. I'm sure it would be tough to stand up in front of a room of people that do not love you and do not necessarily support everything you do and speak to them and try and convince them that they're wrong on this. But showing up and speaking to people is an unbelievable tool. You sit in the same room with them. You speak to thousands of people at the GOP convention and you try and make your case. There's no downside. You can only try and convince voters, and I think he'd have some pretty good success doing so, that he is a good leader in Washington, D.C. But his failure to do that is why there's been so much animosity and why some of those calls continue to grow. And there's nobody else to blame but Senator Tillis and his staff for, I guess, determining that it's not a big deal, that it's something that they didn't have to worry about. And it's part of the large reason why he has received this label as a rhino, Republican in name only, which was a question from Jake Tapper on CNN last night.
I tell him, I agree, I'm a rhino. I've just got a different take on it. I'm a Republican in need of outcomes. And the thing that most of these so-called true conservatives have in common, whether they're elected or party leaders, they've never legislated. They haven't scratched the surface of what I've been responsible for real, meaningful Second Amendment bills, for property rights reform, for pro-life movement. So they can spare me the amateurish view of how this world works because they don't have a body of work to point to. I do. And so if they want to call me a rhino, then go ask themselves, what advances did we make on so many conservative issues when I was speaker? And what have we done here on spending or on conservative legislation that's hit the president's desk that some people is bipartisan, but it's fundamentally sound conservative legislation? I don't apologize for my body of work. I've run on it in multiple primaries, and I've won every one of them.
I hear what Tillis is saying, and he's not wrong. But the arrogance of not showing up and speaking to these people is why that word is thrown around so much at him. His inability to connect with the conservative grassroots base of the party, his inability to show up and speak to these people and discuss their very real concerns that they have is why he has this label. And that response and that answer, I mean, he just comes off like he just comes off incredibly arrogant. He comes, oh, well, they've never legislated. Yeah, that's true. That's why it is incumbent on you as a lawmaker, as an incredibly influential and powerful person in Washington, D.C., to come down to your home state of North Carolina and make that case to your voters, not making your case with Jake freaking Tapper on CNN. That is not where you make your case to your conservative base. That is not where you make your case to the voters of North Carolina. You don't go on CNN and do it, Tom. You show up at the NCGOP convention every year. You show up at county GOP meetings. You show up at Lincoln, Reagan, Douglas dinners and talk to the voters. That's how you do that process. He failed miserably in doing that, and it's why he has such fractured support here in the state of North Carolina. What he says is right. It is very hard to legislate. It is very hard to govern. And to his credit, there are a lot of folks on the right that have absolutely no idea what it is like to govern. And they have this idealistic view of how government works, this idealistic view of how leadership happens, and it's completely misinformed. It is completely divorced from reality. I will give him that. But again, the fact of the matter is Senator Tillis has never tried to convince these people otherwise. He has run away scared from his base. And I mean that. There's a reason that he has never shown up to an NCGOP convention in modern times. I've been going to those conventions now for 7 or 8 years. He's never been there. I've been to hundreds of political events across the state of North Carolina. I believe I've seen the senator twice. One at a fundraiser event, the other time at an opioid settlement here in the city of Wilmington back, I don't know, probably a year or so ago. Those are the two times that I've seen and interacted with Senator Tillis. And that's a problem. It's not about me, but it's about the individuals that show up to these kinds of events. Is there this unrealistic, idealistic view of how leadership and how governance should happen? Yes, absolutely. And again, I would argue it is your responsibility as a lawmaker. It is your responsibility as a member of the United States Senate to speak to your constituents in a form and address their issues head on. I'm sure it's not easy. I can't imagine showing up to a room with an adversarial crowd. Probably not the greatest situation in the world. I get it. But I would argue that you've got if you want those people to support you and you want them to not have this misunderstanding about how you govern, I would argue it's your responsibility to do so. And once again, Senator Tillis and his staff have failed miserably with doing that. And I say that as somebody who has been actively involved in party politics now for well over 7 or 8 years, somebody who continues to follow this stuff day in and day out and continues to go to these events. A grave miscalculation from Senator Tillis. We've got a lot more to get into, a question about who would he want to see as a potential candidate, a question about Laura Trump, a very interesting one coming up. We'll continue with these clips from Senator Tillis's interview on CNN yesterday with Jake Tapper. But before that, when legal challenges arise, make sure you put your trust in the law group right here in Wilmington. Since 2003, their experienced attorneys have provided high-quality, affordable legal services across eastern North Carolina. Whether you're facing a divorce, navigating real estate transactions, or maybe you're in a position where you need a strong defense, the Law Group has your back. Their dedicated team ensures your questions are answered and issues are resolved promptly. Great news, they're located in downtown Wilmington and just a phone call away at 910-251-6088, or you can visit their website, lawgroupnc.com. That's 910-251-6088, or again online, their website, lawgroupnc.com. Phenomenal website over there. They've got all of the various areas of practice that they specialize in. You can read bios and descriptions on all of their attorneys, and they've got a really great blog that discusses a variety of legal challenges and manners. All of that available over at their website, lawgroupnc.com. The Law Group, experience and dedication you can rely on. We are very appreciative of the Law Group and their continued support of the Nick Craig Show. More on this interview with Senator Tom Tillis coming up after this as the Nick Craig Show rolls on live on a Thursday morning, streaming on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. And a good Thursday morning to you. Welcome back to the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X, 24/7, wherever you get your podcasts. Continuing our coverage this morning of an exclusive interview on CNN last night with Jake Tapper interviewing U.S. Senator Tom Tillis from the state of North Carolina, his first interview after announcing last week that he would in fact not be seeking re-election in the 2026 midterm election here in the state of North Carolina. Senator Tillis was asked about some potential candidates. Of course, CNN brought up Mark Robinson because they love dunking on Republicans. Tillis slammed Robinson and then was asked about Laura Trump, and he gave a very interesting answer to that. Jake Tapper said, well, you know, there's been a lot of discussion of Laura Trump. This was Tillis's reaction.
What if it were Laura Trump? This talk of her running.
They've all got to decide. You know, our state is very difficult for Republicans to win. In both cases, I've won by fewer than 2 points. So they need to be really smart about the name on the ballot and the profile on the ballot to have an opportunity to win. It would have been a very difficult race for me.
Well, that is not the star-studded endorsement that I think many people were probably expecting the senator to give, seemingly throwing cold water on the idea of Laura Trump running as the Republican candidate in the primary. And I don't know if I've mentioned this or stated this publicly on the show. I know I've discussed it privately with folks, but I'm not sure that Laura Trump wants the job. I don't even know that it would make sense for her to run in this race. She's got a phenomenal life down in Florida. She's got young children. I don't know why she would want this position. I'm not saying I don't support her running for it, but I'm laying out the situation that's in front of us and why somebody like Laura Trump would want to move to the state of North Carolina. Yes, her parents are here in Wilmington. Sure, I get all of that. But why she would want to come to the state of North Carolina and go through with what Senator Tillis says being 100% accurate, an incredibly tough election, an incredibly tough campaign to win, regardless of whether you are a Republican or a Democrat. Senate races here in North Carolina, at least in modern history, have not necessarily, vote differences between the two candidates. Senator Tillis notes that he's won by less than 2% every time. Our most recent election in 2022, Ted Budd won by just over 2 percentage points, which is a decent size margin, but it is going to be a very close and an incredibly expensive race, regardless of who the candidate is. Now, the senator did not dive into who he thinks the replacement should be, but he did say that he is going to be working with the Trump administration and presumably with folks here in the state of North Carolina over the next couple of months to figure out who is the best candidate going forward. There's obviously a lot of members of Congress that are in discussion for this. Laura Trump, Michael Whatley, the head of the Republican National Committee, discussions about potentially Dan Bishop, who was a member of Congress, ran for attorney general last year. There are a lot of names out there, and it's going to be interesting as we continue to work through the month of July and then through August, what names look like they are heading to the top of the list, what individuals seemingly are making that power play to not only, you know, secure the victory in the primary, but of course get President Trump's endorsement and then move on to a general election where the rumors are this morning that it is very likely that former Governor Roy Cooper is set to jump into this race. With that being the case, it is going to be an incredibly tough race for Republicans. Whether it's Tom Tillis, Laura Trump, a current member of Congress, Dan Bishop, it is going to be a very, very knockout, drag-out battle between the Democrat and the Republican in what will be the most expensive United States or Senate race that has ever taken place in United States history. So it's going to be a tough one across the board. Now, Senator Tillis said that he does not have an issue with President Donald Trump, but however, he does have an issue with some people around him that he describes as amateurs.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with President Trump. Right. I got a problem with some of the people I consider to be amateurs advising him.
What do you make when you go on
social? I want to make it very clear to them, guys. Yeah. When you act like the president, when he's out of the room, you don't impress me. And they'll hear more of that in the coming months.
Who are you talking about specifically? Stephen Miller?
We'll get to that.
He didn't get to it in this interview, but he seemingly is frustrated with people around President Trump. He claims and continues to claim that they are giving him bad advice, that when the president is not in the room, that they are essentially acting as if they are President Donald Trump. He is not impressed with that. Who those people are, he didn't say, but he'll have time to do so. Kind of goes in the face of supporting and working with the president, which he claimed earlier in the interview. You already heard that from him, that he's going to stand by President Trump. He's going to be there with President Trump, trying to make sure he's the most successful. Not sure how he's going to do that while at the same time dragging down people that are closely aligned with the president. Seems like those two things can't necessarily exist in the same sphere. I don't know how you can be supporting the president while presumably at the same time you're going to be dogging people who are working very closely with him. Some of his top advisors, not sure who those people are. Senator Tillis did not get into those details, even as much as Jake Tapper wanted him to. He followed up later on about that. But again, going back to the tough race that Senator Tillis would have had here in North Carolina, one of the things very early on this cycle that caused a lot of frustration with the Republican base across North Carolina was the reporting in, I believe it was the Washington Post, that Senator Tillis was potentially setting himself up to nuke the nomination of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. Senator Tillis was asked about that. He had a pretty concise answer here for Jake Tapper and said that if the vote happened today, he would not support Hegseth.
With the passing of time, I think it's clear he's out of his depth as a manager of a large, complex organization.
Yeah, what was your reaction to the Signalgate situation?
Well, that's just one. I mean, this whole idea of having a pause in Ukraine defensive arms, right. That's just amateurish. I mean, that's from somebody who doesn't understand large organization dynamics. So, you know, I don't regret the decision I made back then based on the facts as I knew them then. But today I am beginning to wonder if maybe Armed Services was a little bit generous with respect to their assessment of his capabilities as a manager of the world's largest, most complex, and arguably consequential organization.
So you don't regret it, but if you had to do it again today, you probably wouldn't vote yes?
I think based on the information I have today, if all I had was the information on the day of the vote, I'd certainly vote for him again. But now I have the information of him being a manager, and I don't think that his probationary period has been very positive.
So not a fan of Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth. If the vote was today for confirmation, presumably words out of his mouth, not mine, Senator Tillis would not support that. And again, that was one of the big things that caused a lot of frustration from many in the Republican and conservative base. Just weeks into the Trump administration, you've got Senator Tom Tillis up in Washington, D.C., trying to nuke Pete Hegseth's nomination. And that, again, is one of the frustrations that voters have continually had with him, is when you've got this Republican administration in place, and Senator Tillis, as he claims, he's most of the time supports the president, works with the president. However, they find it incredibly frustrating that he is in the Washington Post, in the New York Times, in these left-leaning rag outlets going against the administration and their attempt to build a cabinet, which is something that obviously the president has an obligation to do and didn't. Of course, January the 6th came up in this. Tillis has received a lot of heat for that, spiking the nomination of Ed Martin to the District of Columbia. Jake Tapper and CNN Democrats, they love talking about January the 6th. It's the worst thing that's ever happened in American history. And anytime they can get a microphone or a camera in front of a Republican, they are just obligated. I guess it's their moral obligation to bring up January the 6th. Senator Tillis goes through the process of how he supports law enforcement, and there's hundreds of people that were pardoned by President Donald Trump that are dangerous, hardened criminals, so on and so forth. Again, when you do an interview with the left-wing media like CNN, those are the kinds of questions that you are going to be asked. And unfortunately, those are the kinds of questions that, again, pushes Senator Tillis farther and farther away from his base. FEMA has been a major discussion in Washington, D.C. as well. President Donald Trump announcing back just a couple of months ago that after this hurricane season, he would like, he would like to dissolve portions of FEMA, not get rid of the entity completely, but put some more of that responsibility on state and local governments. That was a question by Jake Tapper. Here is Senator Tillis's response.
Can y'all imagine if all of a sudden we've got a storm forming off of Africa coming this way? Maybe it's moving over. It's a Category 1. That the southeastern states are going to have to get together and do paper, scissors, rock to see who's going to manage this regional impact. I mean, the last time I checked, storms have a really bad habit of crossing state and county jurisdictions.
They don't care who's congressional district.
So to me, anybody that's advising the president we should get rid of FEMA has clearly had no experience with disaster response. We have a lot of experience with disaster response in the Southeast. We've got a number of recommendations to modernize FEMA, to shift more responsibility down. But the federal government has to be the convening authority. I mean, FEMA was actually, its birth was out of a disastrous response in the past. But if we're talking about changing the execution, that's fine. But the federal government has to play a role. There are no major storms that that you could possibly have a coordinated, solid response to if it's a pickup game by states.
Right.
And so it's just absurd. Whoever recommended that clearly is out of their depth on disaster response.
Disagree with the senator mightily on that. This idea that the federal government has to be and is obligated to be in this business of disaster relief, aka boots on the ground, and that the states are not better suited to deal with natural disasters, I don't agree with at all. And he says, I don't know who made this decision. President Trump convened a group of individuals, including congressmen and women from the state of North Carolina, to determine if FEMA was viable going forward. Now, we haven't seen the exact plan on what that's going to look like, and some of it is probably going to be contingent on how bad this hurricane season is, the 2025 Atlantic hurricane season. But there does need to be dramatic changes to how FEMA operates. What we have learned through two storms last year, of course, Helene in western North Carolina and another storm in portions of southern Florida, is that the federal government, in large part, is completely and totally incompetent when it comes to relief. They bog down the process. They put up a bunch of red tape. Everything takes 16 middle managers to go through for approval. That's not sustainable. And so the ideas that you've heard from the Trump administration on FEMA is, let's just turn FEMA into a check-writing entity. When a natural disaster hits Florida, North Carolina, South Carolina, Georgia, Virginia, whatever the state may be, when that happens, the state is the one that is responsible for dealing with the natural disaster, and the federal government starts writing checks to facilitate that happening. I believe, at least from what I've heard and the plans that I believe are probably pending, I think that makes a lot of sense. Because we know for certain, when you flood an area with individuals that do not live in the state, individuals who are not from the state, that are from the federal government and from FEMA, into an area that they know nothing about geographically, that they know nothing about politically, they don't know who all the stakeholders are and everybody associated with it, when that happens, the delay, the response is incredibly delayed. When that happens, you get a lackluster federal response to an incredibly destructive natural disaster. We saw that. We literally watched that unfold 10 months ago out in Western North Carolina. FEMA came into the area, was taking over different places and just sitting on their hands because they were waiting for some bureaucrat in Washington, D.C. to give them a thumbs up so that they could move forward. Now, does FEMA need to be completely replaced? Does it need to be scaled down? There's still a lot of debate on that. But again, this arrogance from Senator Tillis, whoever's giving him this advice knows nothing about disaster recovery. Senator Tillis, I disagree with you. And you know what? There's a lot of criticism from your constituents in Western North Carolina about your lackluster response to Hurricane Helene. Your lackluster response. That was one of the questions from Jake Tapper reading a tweet from President or a post from President Donald Trump about Western North Carolina relief. Here was the response from Tillis.
Tom Tillis has hurt the great people of North Carolina, even on the catastrophic flooding. Nothing was done to help until I took office. Then a miracle took place. Tillis is a talker and a complainer, not a doer.
Well, President, I get to Western North Carolina and see if his view of the work that I've done there fits with the view of Western North Carolinians. I think that they're pretty happy with how much I leaned into it.
Not true.
Even advising the Trump campaign to probably not land in Asheville during the campaign when we were trying to use the airport right to evac victims. So I will agree to disagree on that one.
Yeah, the people of Western North Carolina are not happy with Senator Tom Tillis. And he admitted earlier in the thing, he doesn't read social media. He doesn't look at comments. I would probably encourage him and his staff to do so because the people out in the western half of the state were very frustrated with Senator Tillis's response to Western North Carolina. They were very frustrated with the lack of anything happening at the federal level. Of course, a lot of that was being charged by the Joe Biden administration at the time, but Senator Tillis, a very influential, a very powerful voice in Washington, D.C., so his understanding of what people think is probably not actually the case in the western half of the state. But as he says, we'll just have to agree to disagree on that. Yet all of this and a lot of this comes down to the role of the federal government. And we've got some comments coming in on our Rumble live chat this morning. Is FEMA more than welfare for the uninsured? I don't know that I'd call it welfare for the uninsured. But again, you just get an incredible amount of red tape when you bring the federal government into an area that is dealing with catastrophic devastation, which I think is an accurate term to describe Western North Carolina after Hurricane Helene. Portions of Eastern North Carolina after storms like Hurricane Fran and Hurricane Florence, catastrophic damage. The federal government comes in. We know for a fact that the federal government does nothing in an expeditious manner. We know that the federal government is not speedy in anything that they do. Yet we put them in charge, and in many cases, they coordinate what needs to be very quick disaster response. I would make the argument and make the point that states like North Carolina are more well-suited to deal with that in the immediate aftermath than the federal government. When you've got ocean or you've got flood rescues going on in real time, it's not FEMA. It's the local individuals, and it's the state National Guard. Now, where does FEMA come into play and where should FEMA come into play? When you've got $60 billion or $80 billion worth of damage, which is what some of the estimates are out in the western half of the state, that's where you need the federal government to come in, write checks and give states the ability and areas the ability to rebuild. To me, a state like North Carolina, which is prone to hurricanes and has a, by the way, a fully funded emergency management department, Will Ray, the director of the state emergency management department, they should be capable of dealing with a hurricane. They are a fully funded, fully operated 24/7, 365 entity that you and I pay for as taxpayers. They and local municipalities should have the ability to deal with disasters. They should be the ones coordinating, not the federal government. We don't need individuals from Washington, D.C. coming down here and bloating the entire situation, putting in a bunch of red tape and a bunch of bureaucratic hoops to get through. It's just, there's no reason for it. The president has seen the failures of FEMA. The state of North Carolina, the western half of our state, has seen the failures of FEMA, and they are very unhappy with what they saw. And they want to change. They believe the system is broken. President Donald Trump believes the system is broken. And as we get into the latter parts of this year and into early parts of 2026, I am very curious what some of these plans are going to look like coming out of this administration. I have no question in my mind that FEMA is broken and needs significant, not just little tweaks here and there, but significant changes. What those look like, what is the best answer, what is the best response, I don't know. And I don't know that there has to be this, oh, we have the solution that fixes all problems, because that's typically not how things work. But what we do know is that FEMA in its current entity does not work. So we've got two options. We can embark in insanity, which is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result, or we can try something new. The thing we try new, does it guarantee that it's better? No. Does it guarantee that it is a silver bullet solution to the problem? No, it doesn't. But I am far more in favor of trying something new when you've got a system set up that you know doesn't work. And I will argue, and many other folks across the state and across the nation would argue, FEMA in its current form doesn't work. It just doesn't. So we shall sit and watch and wait and see what happens. But this notion, this idea, and you can already imagine what the situation is going to be, all of the criticism that will be laid at the feet of President Donald Trump if FEMA makes a drastic change and there's another natural disaster. Folks, we have a broken system. I believe that the president has an obligation to try and fix it. I believe that the president, the chief executive of the United States, has an obligation to make changes. Does it mean it's a catch-all fix? No. But I am all in favor of trying something new, trying something different, and trying to work your way towards a better result. That's how progress works. When something is broken, when something is not working, you can't just sit there and go, oh, well, yeah, you know, we just got to continue with it because it's the way that we've always done things in the past. That's not a solution. And that's a large part of why our federal government is so freaking broken. It's because there's this notion of, oh, we've just always done it that way. Oh, yeah, we've been doing it like that for 40 years. That's why, you know, we don't bother tracking any of our payments because that's just the way that we do things around here. That's why we just continue to write checks and continue to not track payments in the Treasury payment system. No detailed invoices, no tracking of payments going out. It's just the way that we do things. We give hundreds of millions of dollars to USAID every year. They funnel that money to various charities and groups with no accounting, no tracking, nothing. Oh, yeah, it's just the way that we do things. That's what people are so pissed off and frustrated about. That's why people have so much frustration with the federal government, because it's the quintessential definition of status quo. Nothing ever changes. A disaster takes place. An entity botches it, and everybody just goes, "Up, hopefully we'll do better next time." That's not a solution for me. That is not governance for me. And I think, you know, spending a lot of time on this, but I'm of the mindset that Senator Tillis is dead wrong about the FEMA situation. There does need to be substantial changes to that. And I look forward to seeing what the president and his cabinet and his various advisors, what their plans are, again, on trying something new. Is it going to be perfect? No. Will it maybe not work on the first shot? Absolutely, that's a real possibility. But I'm all for looking for a change on something that I know and you know is already broken and does not work and does not serve its intended purpose. So there's the interview. A couple of things that didn't make the chopping block, as I mentioned, some criticism of Mark Robinson, of course. You know, Mark Robinson's out. He lost the governor race, got his ass handed to him. He has been largely silent since that. CNN wants to continue to drag him up. They knew that Senator Tillis would hammer him. He, in fact, fell right into the trap and did so. Looking at that entire interview, it was about 30 minutes. I'll have the full link in the show notes over at patreon.com/Nick Craig. But I'd say probably the biggest takeaway from me in the interview was Senator Tillis's throwing cold water on the idea that Laura Trump should not, and not that he said she shouldn't be, but really did not give any high praise and really had nothing positive to say about Laura Trump being the candidate. Again, is Laura Trump the perfect candidate? No, because the reality is nobody is the quote unquote perfect candidate. But I'm very curious who Senator Tillis, as he noted, he will continue to work with the administration. He wants to find his replacement. He wants to make sure that a candidate can not only win in the primary and win in the general, which I'm in full agreement with. Very interesting to see him throw cold water on the idea of Laura Trump and essentially not answer the question at all that Jake Tapper asked him. So we'll likely see some continued fallout on that in the coming days and weeks. This story is set to continue to play out over the next year and a half. We'll continue to track the details right here on the Nick Craig Show. Well, that's going to do it for a Thursday edition. If you've got comments on Senator Tillis, encourage you to drop those on our YouTube, Rumble, or X channels. Always appreciate and like reading the feedback there. Thanks to the Law Group here in Wilmington for their continued support. Visit them online at lawgroupnc.com. or give them a call at 910-251-6088. That's going to do it for a Thursday edition of the Nick Craig Show, streaming live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, and 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts. Have a great day.